Welcome to the Pro Wrestling Outsiders Show, where we have one-sided conversations and unsolicited opinions. Here's your host, Kyle Joseph.
Welcome to the Pro Wrestling Outsider Show. Once again, this is your host, Kyle. Thank you much for joining. As always, this is the show with one-sided conversations and, of course, unsolicited opinions. On this episode, we are going to talk WWE's move towards Money in the Bank and what that looks like, plus a massive return. As well, we're going to talk AEW Dynamite and my thoughts and opinions on how that show is going. We have no NXT this week, as with AEW Dynamite being on Saturday, it's throwing my routine all out of whack, and we have the Canadian holiday. So we are pumping this episode out a little earlier, and so unfortunately NXT didn't make the schedule. However, I assure you that it will come back next week. All that plus more in our last shot. So please stick around and we'll be right back. It is time now to talk WWE as we prepare ourselves for Money in the Bank taking place July 18th. Some of these matches are starting to take shape. We are still going through qualifiers for both the men's and the women's Money in the Bank matches. At this point in time for the women, we do have Asuka, Naomi, Alexa Bliss, Nikki, and Carmella. I do imagine at some point in time they will announce that Liv Tyler will also be a member, given this past week's match where it was some sort of battle for most beautiful wrestler or something along those lines. And I will keep that a point to myself, as I prefer to see them as more than just that. And I think they all offer something else. They offer quite a bit of athletics. And I think we can put on a better show than just simply who's the prettiest. So, like I said, we are moving towards it. On the men's side, we currently have Drew McIntyre, as he was just the victor on Monday Night Raw. We have Riddle, Ricochet, John Morrison, and Big E. Let's see how we get there. We still have, obviously, three more entries. No real indication as to how we're going to get there, but I'm sure, well, obviously, over the next 2 weeks, we will understand who's going to be involved. And it's one of the things I find interesting. We do have Sammy versus Kevin Owens as the Money in the Bank qualifier, a last man standing match, which I think is great. I think it's a different way to do things. It incorporates their history, their story, in kind of at this current moment finality to it, where everyone knows, though, at any point in time they can bring it back up if they need that support. In that case, I think, given the current roster that is in this match, I feel like Sammy would pair well with the rest of the wrestlers to create a better, or rather more entertaining show. And so, as oddly as it sounds, my hope is that Sammy wins, just to offer something different. I think it would be very interesting with Sammy as the Money in the Bank winner. It's not going to happen, but I do think it would be very interesting. So, I mean, if we look at that, that is definitely, you know, they're going to be the sixth or seventh or eighth member to join. In when we look at Raw, as we had this battle royal to determine who would take Randy's place in this last chance match with AJ, Drew, and Randy, I did get a good, really good kick out of Riddle taking over on behalf of Randy, and not only that, but taking over like his music and his actions and everything. So I thought it was really, really clever the way they did that. I will say that it's one of those tough ones where you want to see it carry through and kind of see what how much more he's going to do. But at the same time, like, you knew he was going to win the battle royal. There's no doubt about it because of how they wanted to kind of carry that through. I was surprised when Drew won. I really thought that Riddle was going to win and then we'd have Riddle versus Randy. But I would have preferred to see AJ in this match because I think AJ would be a better fit than Drew. I also am at the stage now where I think Drew needs to go and do something else. I know they talk about he can't have another match against Bobby, which if he wins will give a strong indication that Bobby will lose that title at some point in time, or they flip a switch and he maybe enters onto the Universal picture, which could be very interesting if we go down that road. I will say that when I watched it, that main event, I was surprised that Amos didn't factor in more, and yes, he saved AJ at one point in time, but that actually didn't matter. As it turns out, the saving was regardless. They referenced that several times that there's no disqualification, so why not utilize that to your advantage? Make it more present that he is this, you know, beast to be reckoned with, and it definitely would benefit AJ. But alas, we don't. We have Drew as the winner. I also happen to notice that when Riddle went out, broke his foot, or whatever you want to call it, the match between Drew and AJ felt really solid. And it would be a match that I would certainly not complain and would rather actually see on a straight one-on-one, because I think that while they are different sizes, but they both have similar experience and can really put together a really good and interesting match. So maybe at some point in time we'll get down that road. One can only hope. I will say that as I was, you know, watching SmackDown and Raw, and they start talking about going back to live events, and I am looking forward to it. I think when you have kind of the canned energy, as I would call it, the piped in chants and all that stuff, that I think that live crowd will really push things in the direction it needs to go. I'm super looking forward to Roman Reigns in his current head of the table and how that will pair with the fans. My hope is even right off the bat we have similar reaction as we did when Reigns beat Taker and he just stood there and they booed him for several minutes and then he said his one line, which is fantastic, and then they boot him some more. So I hope we get that kind of energy where it disrupts what he's doing, specifically because we're supposed to hate him. I don't like when they disrupt on, you know, good guys or guys who are trying to tell a story when you don't give them that option. I will say that, you know, we discussed Big E being in the Money in the Bank ladder match. I feel like this is that opportunity for him to really step up and move beyond the Apollo Crews match, not necessarily move beyond the Intercontinental title. I would be very happy if he did have a run with it, but I think this is the one that he needs to do to showcase that he can carry a title, that he can carry a set of, you know, that tier of wrestlers to keep people interested, to keep watching forward. And so he really does need a good showing in order to kind of convince people that this can happen. One thing I was reading about that, you know, after the coronation of Shinsuke Nakamura, which at one point in time was referenced as King Shay Nakamura, which I really hope doesn't stick, but Baron Corbin is back to being Baron Corbin. So, you know, they've kind of finally ended the King Corbin reign. They've kind of put that all to bed, and hopefully we'll see some of that more, that lone wolf, you know, pure badass, which I always enjoyed. And it would be nice if they went back to his really old music they use in NXT, where he would stand there and they'd have the white light on him. And I always thought that was really good. So I am interested to see where Baron goes with this. Hopefully it's not, you know, washed out and just kind of sitting there on main event size. When we talked about you know, Roman Reigns, we had again had a fantastic promo from Paul Heyman, which is always a delight. I know last week I mentioned how he is kind of the perfect manager, and this today, you know, this week's episode was no different. I did find it very interesting and very rare that he referenced Braun Strowman given the circumstances of his departure. I don't know what that represents. Is it just simply what happened and Paul has the flexibility to say whatever he wants? Is it mean that at some point in time they'll bring Braun back? It's really kind of up in the air, but it was very rare do they actually mention somebody who is no longer with the company. They kind of, like anything else, they forget who you are before you come and they forget who you are once you're gone. At the end of the episode, we do get the return of Edge, which it's a nice, again, Rey Mysterio was a good bridge to the next big storyline for him. And I think Edge, there's still that residual feelings, that residual animosity. So we can carry this through. Clearly, there'll be a Money in the Bank match between Edge and Roman. Depending on how that match goes and how it ends up, I think we'll really sell with SummerSlam as to, is there going to be a title change? I hope that we don't see it at Money in the Bank, but I hope that it really pushes Roman to the limit. Whether Jay comes back or Jimmy gets involved, only time will tell. But it is nice to see, and I think really for Edge, this is the right place. Comes in, does his thing, pushes people along, and then kind of steps out again. And I think from a health side of point, it makes sense, but also there is enough current talent that bringing back somebody of Edge's status is harder on those guys. You have a Hall of Famer, you have the rated R superstar, you have a fan favorite. When he comes in, some of those other fan favorites get knocked down a couple of pegs. So certainly I'm looking forward to this carrying forward and where that comes coming up next Friday, or rather this Friday in a couple of days. So when I was watching the Battle Royal, there was kind of a semi-interesting segment where you had the 24/7 title switch hands a couple of times. I actually didn't even realize that the 24/7 title was still a thing. Honestly, other than R-Truth, I can't see why this still exists. It just, if you're not going to do it the way that they did with the hardcore title, or the way that it initially started out. So when you had, at one point in time, the Gronk had it, and then they snuck out onto the football field and you know, pinned him, or Jinder Mahal had it at one point in time, and then R-Truth comes and sneaks over and, you know, pins him while he's sleeping. Like, do that when it's outside of the arena. So when you constantly have just chasing around by like seven or eight guys, it just gets a little tiresome. But this is your opportunity to be really, really creative, and I'm just not seeing it. If I'm not going to see it, then what's the point? On Monday Night Raw, we did have a match between John Morrison and Ricochet, two guys who were going to enter Money in the Bank. Very clever start in their interview, and then, you know, further solid comedic pieces with The Miz. Again, it's important that he's there. John Morrison is really taking the lead because of Miz's injury, but Miz keeps things still relevant and he keeps in people's faces. Ricochet was fantastic in this match. I think a lot of people opened their eyes again and more so like have re-understood or realized that Ricochet is still so entertaining to watch. And yes, at some point in time, for whatever reason, he fell off. I'm assuming it's just there wasn't a story for him. But his work with Ali has really, I think, brought him back into the mix. And this was a fantastic match. I want to specifically call out the insane crossbody jumping from the top rope in the middle of the rope, not in the post. And clearing the entire side of the mat to hitting Morrison on the other side of the barricade. And it was just, it was incredible. It was perfectly timed. It was perfectly landed. And what I also liked is it kind of gave an idea of like, this was as painful for both of them. And as a result, neither one of them won. And I feel like that is the best way to do it, because if you're going to bring them into Money in the Bank, trying to even them out a little will just help things along. I can only assume they're going to have another match before then because it was. I just hope that they remain as entertaining because they are both of a Lucha style. And in fact, they both would have appeared on Lucha Underground at the same time. Ricochet being Prince Puma and Johnny M being Johnny Wrestling. Nope. He would have been Johnny Underground, Johnny Lucha, whatever he was called. And then it would turn into Johnny Impact. But they put on a great match. It's one of the better matches I've seen Morrison in since I've seen him come back. But it was barely a step up. And then the other one to note for me was the Jackson Riker, Elias strap match. It had its moments. It certainly was a necessity to kind of carry their story through. But one thing I kind of got through, especially when he was preparing and he kept slapping his back with the strap, and he was talking to R-Truth and kind of some of the way he was talking, he's like, I feel like it was like an old school, what would have been Paul Bettany's character in Da Vinci Code, but kind of that like following God and punishing himself for his own sins and things like that. But you can't do that in this day and age. You know, politics and religion definitely stay out of WWE in that more family-friendly, business-friendly environment. But it kind of made me wonder that his character would have done very well and would have been very polarizing in the Attitude Era, Ruthless Aggression Era, whatever era you want to call it prior to the family-friendly era, that it would have been interesting to see. I would love to see it now. I would be very shocked. Absolutely shocked if we happen to see that in this day and age. So that kind of wraps up WWE for me. More matches to come as we move through Money in the Bank. We obviously have Kofi versus Bobby Lashley. I can only assume how that's going to go. And then we have Charlotte and Rhea and carrying through that story. And then at some point in time, we will see another championship women's tag match between Natalya and Tamina. Who are they? Are they good? Are they bad? Are they indifferent? Versus Mandy and Dana. So at this point, though, it only still makes sense for them to carry the belts. I do think, honestly, that the Iconics would have been better suited in this space. Or I can't even think of anybody else. Really, the Riot Squad. Those ones that are really clearly tag teams. And our tech teams through and through, but we don't have those, so we might as well go with the two legends, current legends, whatever you want to call them, most known in Tamina and Natalya. So we'll see how that goes, but that does wrap up WWE. Up next, we are going to talk AEW Dynamite, so please stay tuned. It's the Pro Wrestling Outsider Show. You know what that means. AEW Dynamite. Have to applaud Jim Ross for coming up with that set opening. Right off the hop, everybody knows what it is. There's no confusion. So props to him. As we move forward, we're watching a special Saturday night episode of Dynamite. Totally throws schedules out of whack, but you got to do what you got to do. Basketball's too much of a moneymaker to put that aside. I am looking forward to, you know, we're going back to Wednesday night. We're going to get some live audience further. They're going to start, you know, touring. And I haven't had a chance to see them in that space and how they operate on that kind of on the road. So I'm hoping to see kind of a difference in how they present themselves on a Dynamite outside of Jacksonville. So whether they go to Miami or they go up to North Carolina or whatever the case may be, I'm hoping we'll see a very definitive, this is the AEW set when we're indoors, and this is like the camera angles and how they operate the pyro and all that other stuff, to really see if they can continue to differentiate themselves but still make people understand that it is different when it's indoors versus outdoors. So as I was watching through, they did reference that Trent went through neck fusion surgery. I know that that is never a good thing, so we hope that he definitely recovers properly, quickly, healthily. Whether he comes back or not, I know nothing about neck fusion surgeries. I just know that's not normal when you fuse two discs. And it does kind of make me think, do wrestlers consider that as a risk? Do they ignore it? Do they accept the reality of it when they're wrestling, when they're defining their own wrestling style? And I know that when you look at Edge and Daniel Bryan and the way that they've kind of come back with their neck issues, but then you look at Tyson Kidd and how he's moved on to a producer role, same thing with Jason Jordan. Paige's, there was that chance she was going to come back, but so I don't know if they all have very similar neck issues or if there's some, depending on where it is, lends itself better to recover and get back in the ring, but I'm not sure. So hopefully he gets the help he needs, and if it makes sense for him to come back, then it's great. If it doesn't make sense for him to come back, but he still comes back, then that's kind of an iffy thing. On Dynamite, though, we did see the return of Conan, which with his little tidbit with Tully Blanchard. We do have a LAX kind of feel with Conan returning. Obviously, on All In, Dull or Nothing, we kind of knew this was coming because he was sitting in the bar. The one thing I appreciate from Conan is he's really good on the mic. And he's not necessarily loud and boisterous, but when he's on, the zingers he offers are just top-notch. So I'm hoping that, well, I would love the full LAX experience. We're obviously not going to get that. But if they're going to go with Conan in this space, then those two need to separate themselves from the inner circle. Otherwise, you have too many people attached and too many different perspectives. Or the other option is that you completely split them out while they're still part of the inner circle, but they do have their own directions they're going, and then it's fine. Because you know, at the core, you're inner circle, but if they want to run with Conan, they can run with Conan. You know, the interesting thing I found too was the kind of the LAX copy when FTR came in. I know that when LAX was leaving the North, Josh Alexander and Ethan Page kind of did that same thing where they mimicked the way that LAX represents themselves. So Santana Ortiz, and then we saw it with FTR, which, while it's similar, it doesn't impact me. It makes sense, right? When you're trying to convey the surprise, the mockery, the insulting. But when I was listening to it, or rather watching it, the couple of zingers that stood out, one was talking about Tully, and you know, they may be still hiring as Walmart greeters, which, you know, I got a good chuckle out of when you think about it. Like, he looks like the kind of guy that would sit there and welcome people in, but obviously he's not. But it was really, really good. And the other one, which I really got a kick out of, when he was talking about the difference between the FTR who grew up in the Carolinas and you have Santana Ortiz who grew up in New York, and you know how they, while they may have had rougher upbringings, obviously from his perspective, Santana Ortiz was, you know, in the much more dire situation, but he did reference being from Carolina and where the men are men and the sheep are scared. And I mean, man, I got a massive pop out of that one. It was just perfectly timed, perfectly said, and it almost felt like it came right off the top of his head, and it was good. One of the things I noticed too with these guys is at some point in time, and I've said this before and I'll continue to say it, if you keep having the same guys from Pinnacle have the same matches against the guys from the inner circle and they don't involve anybody else in AEW, you're gonna at some point in time just tire out and people are going to stop caring. Yes, they'll enjoy MJF because he's a fantastic heel and he's very good on the mic. And you're going to enjoy Chris Jericho because he's Chris Jericho. And how do you not love everything Chris Jericho does? But if you don't bring in other people for them to face, for them to look at, then
why not? Like, what's the point? So I still think you can have that animosity and you can have those challenges, but you could run a Chris Jericho MJF story across several months where they just insult each other. Or you may have a match between Sammy Guevara and Sean Spears, or you don't, or you have matches against other people. Maybe, you know, Santana Ortiz take over a Private Party and you kind of push them along, but every once in a while you interject somebody from the Pinnacle, and that way you're still aware of this long-standing rivalry without it constantly being the only focus. While I was watching the Hangman Adam Page and Powerhouse Hobbs match, one of the things I did notice, and I appreciate it more in AEW than WWE, is their use of referencing names. And AEW, and specifically in this match, they did call out, yes, it was Powerhouse Hobbs, and there were several references to that, but they also just called him Hobbs. And I think part of it is because AEW is more of a show for existing wrestling fans, whether they're existing in terms of watching WWE or they're existing fans of following New Japan or independent wrestling or whatever it is. But they know you don't need to reference Powerhouse Hobbs as Powerhouse Hobbs for them to know who he is. WWE is obviously a different story. They do a lot of repetition to ensure anybody new understands what's going on. They go based on that assumption that they're constantly getting new viewers, and so in order to get that viewer caught up to date and feel comfortable with what they're watching, you continue to repeat things. But Powerhouse Hobbs being called Hobbs, everybody knows. And I think that's also an option for WWE in the elimination of the need to shorten names. Matt Riddle can still be called Matt Riddle. You can introduce him as Matt Riddle. You can talk about him as Matt Riddle when you're not in a match. You can reference him Matt Riddle on the website. And then you just reference him as Riddle when you're in the match. If you're going to call that match like you're going to call anything else in sports, they don't continuously refer to them by their full name. But they also don't have just one name. There is a happy medium, and I feel like AEW really, really gets that. We did have Andrade come out, nothing specific, Matt Sydal cut him off and things like that. But it kind of got me wondering, with Vicky Guerrero coming there, and she serves her purpose as she needs to, I wonder if Eddie would have ever left WWE to join AEW specifically because Vicky's there, or there might be one or two wrestlers that he really wanted to compete with. Or is he WWE true and true? Now, he went from WCW to WWE, but I think his heart was really in WWE. I think the WWE fans really captured him. But it does get me thinking, like, what would that look like? And at his prime, not necessarily Eddie Guerrero as the, you know, 50-year-old or you know, in the Mark Henry Big Show territory, where, yeah, they can wrestle, but they're definitely not what they used to be. At Eddie's prime physique and his prime abilities, what would that look like in the AEW space? And if he did go, there is no doubt that he would be at the top in the title contention, if not the title holder, and you could easily see somebody like him really being the Kenny Omega, the ultimate champion, the champion for however long, and it would be, I think it'd be pretty interesting. When I was, you know, every time I watch AEW Dynamite, you know, Justin Roberts is their host, their announcer, whatever you want to call him. And I find this really inconsistent with how he delivers the introduction. So for some people, and he did it in the main event with Kenny Omega, he really drew out the name. He offered a lot of excitement for it. And for some people, he does. And for others, he starts with the excitement, and then once he gets to the last name, he just drops right off. And I struggle with what he's trying to... Is he trying to send a message like, this person is good, but not that good? Is he a... You know, if he's kind of a babyface commentator, you would... if he was a good guy, then you'd really ramp up their name altogether. But if he wasn't a good guy, you would just be flat. Or, like, what is that style? And... is that the right thing? So for me, it's not. If you want me to be engaged, then really boost up the way you call his names. Otherwise, it just seems like, well, this guy isn't important. He did it, you know, all the time on this show, and so I have to hope that maybe at some point in time he'll be nice enough to change, but, I mean, who am I to decide? It is, of course, unsolicited opinions. This was a really good, solid Dynamite again. Miro is on fire with his promos. I think he's really hit the mark. Now, whether he's winging it or he has had time to really work through it, does he have somebody helping him? It doesn't matter. He's hitting the point. He carries the message. He continues to show that he is someone to be feared, and his promos aren't just random words. And I look forward to them. I hope he stays champion for a considerable amount of time because he has that whole setup that until he's ready to make that move to really push for the, you know, AEW championship, keep him with the belt, keep these great promos going, and kind of keep him in that really good spot. We went through and we talked about in the past about the Ethan Page Darby Allin match. We had a nice kind of different match in terms of who they were facing. Bear Country versus the best men of the year, whatever they're calling themselves. And then specifically at Ethan Page and Bear Bronson. I've seen Bear Country live at C4, and they're a very fascinating tag team. They're very mobile for guys of their size. Their kind of gimmick is different. It wouldn't necessarily fit into the WWE space in the way they do it. And so this was a good match. Everything made sense. Everything was put together well. You had Ethan Page with a nut shot while the referee's distracted. It looked like he slugged him. It looked like his nuts went up into his throat. Obviously, that wasn't the case. But I have to applaud Ego's ability to powerbomb with the crucifix powerbomb, the Ego's Edge, something like Bear Bronson. And that is quite a feat of strength. And it's not just, it was the way he was able to hold him and kind of move around the ring, and it didn't seem like he was slipping. It didn't seem like he was struggling. And you see a lot of those feats of strength, and you can tell that the other person is really integral to that. That other person, when they go to suplex them and they hold them in the air, you know that it's important that the person being held up has the core strength to remain straight up. And this one, obviously, it was key that he wasn't struggling or anything, but still, to pick up a guy like Baron Bronson and hold him up there and then chuck him, it was certainly an impressive event. And then after that, they had their promo. Ethan Page obviously brings up Darby Allin again because that's the story they're going with. And up offering a coffin match at Road Rager. So I am looking forward to that. I've only ever seen Taker in coffin matches. So how does that look? How is that going to be? Obviously, they won't do it in the same style of Taker, where it's, you know, dark and gloomy, and you have all the Taker paraphernalia and Taker music. So, but it's a different match we haven't seen in a while. I'm all for it. Let's see how it goes. I don't think I've ever seen a Road Rager. I don't know if it's new. So this is another pay-per-view that I get to watch and kind of really sink in and enjoy, and also kind of see how AEW moves, you know, their pay-per-views along. So definitely all for coffin matches. Another match we had was between Bunny and Chris Statlander. Alien Chris. Let's call her that. Alien Chris it is. I like Bunny. I feel like she's definitely better than Allie. When she was an Impact, I don't feel like her and the Butcher and the Blade fit within Matt Hardy's organization. I also don't like how they present Butcher and the Blade anymore. I really enjoyed them when they came into town. It was different. It was like really rugged. Like when he was Pepper Parks, which was also different than when he was Braxton Sutter in Impact and it was nice to see him in how he changed his whole persona and his moveset. And then when they came back with Butcher and the Blade, I was all on board. It was, you know, an excitingly different style team, and they put on great matches. And they had a much more gritty, darker feel to them. And now I see Blade rocking a retro steampunk obscure Butcher's outfit. I don't like it. And when you watch Andy come out, the Blade come out, and he's wearing like a white t-shirt, white jeans, it's just, I wish they would kind of separate themselves from Matt Hardy and kind of go back to what they were when they joined up with AEW, what they were when I've seen them in C4. That's really where I would prefer them. But it kind of also gives me some kind of a nice segue into what I appreciate when it comes to characters within AEW. Because they are, a lot of them are bringing them out from previous promotions, and at this point in time, a lot of it is created before they come to AEW. At some point in time, I'm sure they will really have standout characters that are specific to AEW that may or may not be able to carry forward if they leave AEW. But they certainly have much more freedom than WWE. Yes, it's a little bit more like NXT. NXT has a little bit more freedom because it's a smaller crowd. It's a more dedicated crowd. But when you have characters like Butcher and Blade, would never exist in the WWE space. When you have Pentagon in how he presents himself, you would never have in WWE. Their luchas are very kid friendly. Let's bring them to your birthday party. You know, let's have lots of fun. You don't have a real scary, intimidating lucha wrestler in WWE. So I don't think Penta would carry through, but I do applaud that they have that flexibility to really do what they want, bring kind of those obscure characters in, and kind of have that freedom to run with it. And another example is Jungle Express. So when you look at Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus, 100% you're never getting Luchasaurus in WWE. Now, I'm not a fan of Luchasaurus, but I can appreciate his willingness to go down that road, to hide his face, to change his identity from Big Brother Austin, and go with that. And they've carried that through, you know, in Lucha Underground, it made sense. And then you somehow continue it going, and he's obviously had quite a bit of success. So that mixed with Jungle Boy, it is a nice pairing, and it is something you would never see in WWE. But it was funny, I was watching the lead up to the main event, to the AEW Championship match with Jungle Boy and Kenny Omega, and I thought to myself, I said, you know, where is Luchasaurus? I haven't seen him pretty much since I started watching AEW, at least not as much. And I was scouring the internet, and I couldn't figure out what happened to him. Everything was all old articles. And then, funny enough, when that main event started, there he was. Him and Marco Stunt just happened to show up. But it did get me thinking that it seems like they're giving Jungle Boy a push, and if they're to do that, then they have to leave Luchasaurus on the sidelines in the back. If you're to market somebody like Jungle Boy as your sole, you know, kind of your up-and-comer, he has to be away from a tag team, because visually, Luchasaurus is going to stand out. He's tall. He's wearing a dinosaur mask. He is more physically imposing. And so that's what's going to draw your eye. Jungle Boy is a very young looking individual, because he probably is young. He's smaller in stature. He is more, I would say, family friendly or fan friendly. And so if you need him to stand out, then he has to stand out by not having anybody behind him. I will say that when I watched this match, I was very impressed. I thought it was a great match. I thought Jungle Boy really stepped up. There was that chance that he could win. And for me, that's integral. If I'm watching a match, especially a championship match, especially with somebody who you want as a promotion to be considered as a possible champion, there has to be a chance for him to win. If it's a squash match, if it's an embarrassment match, unless that is the start of a major storyline, then you've just burned that character. Cesaro, for me, is an example. When you had him facing Roman Reigns, there wasn't really a chance he was going to win. And sure enough, now he's kind of out of the picture. He's got his thing with Seth still in this weird, you know, mixed tag team match, but that's a WWE thing. So this one was great. It was great back and forth. There was the big thing I appreciated is that the outside interference was, for the most part, non-existent. They came out at the beginning. The referee sent them all back, so you get a pure one-on-one, and then it was only at the end where things kind of went south, but I like that. I want to see a good wrestling match where I'm not so focused on the outside. Yes, I have to listen to Don Callis, which is painstaking, but when you're watching, your focus is on two guys competing for the title. So once again, you know, this was another great Dynamite. As I'm watching more Dynamite, I'm getting more familiar with the characters. I'm more engaged with the shows, with the storyline. So now I feel like I really know what's going on. When I first started watching AEW, and I've did the same thing with Impact, I have a born and bred WWE. So the camera style, the presentation style of WWE is very specific. So when you take yourself away from that and you're looking at more of a raw view, or less polished, which is fine. It's just, it was harder for me to really watch. But I'm maturing in my wrestling views, and so I've gotten more comfortable with watching more Impact, and now with AEW, and dedicating myself to, at this point, the 2 hours on Wednesday. We'll tack on the hour on Friday. I'm still not sure if I'll get a chance to watch the Dark YouTube shows. But at least I can be much more comfortable in the way that they're presenting themselves, and so I can really, really focus on the stories being told, the wrestlers involved, plus I know who they are, which is carries a lot of weight instead of watching two complete strangers doing some stuff, talking about some stuff, and not knowing anything that's going on. So AEW is back on Wednesday coming up, which is always good because it gets me back on my schedule, and we can move forward. Hopefully next week we'll see some continued setup for the Road Rager pay-per-view. I'm really interested to see what's happening with the Brian Cage situation with Team Taz. Obviously, there's going to come to some sort of climax with that, and I imagine Brian Cage will split out, but only time will tell. So after the break, we have Last Shot coming up, and we'll wrap up the show and get you on your way. So please stick around and enjoy this 1 second break. It's that time of the show, Last Shot, final thoughts before we send John your way. We talked WWE, we talked AEW, next week we'll add NXT again, but all in all, it kind of all wraps up into the storytelling and how much I appreciate how wrestling carries their stories. It is very rare in any television that you can watch a wrestler and he can go from good to bad in a mere one sentence, or he can go from bad to good based on one action. And everyone believes it, everyone follows it, and everyone can see that it's plausible. You have Roman Reigns as a prime example. He was the babyface when he was part of Shield. First they were bad, then they became good. Everybody's on board. Did not take any effort to turn everybody into fans. Shield goes through the situation. They're still pushing Roman Reigns as, you know, the babyface. He goes away. He comes back. Ultimate heel. Everybody is on board. It all makes sense. And it's an appreciation I have for the relationship between wrestling promotions and their fans, in that we all, while wrestling is predetermined, we can all get behind these stories. And I liken it to when you have an actor who is in one show and he plays a bad guy, but at some point in time he's in another show where he plays a good guy. The great actors can allow you to split out and not consider their character in some other unrelated show or unrelated movie. And you can appreciate them on either side. wrestling just does it smoother and more often, and you don't get that opportunity to just kind of put that person aside and then think of them later. So it's really important to have those stories, and it's really enjoyable when you're able to move characters around in whatever way you need them to, and everyone's on board. It also is the idea, like, Roman Reigns has been beaten before, but now that he's back, he is unbeatable. And it's important that he's unbeatable. It's important to the story they're telling that if he's unbeatable, if he's the head of the table, nobody can beat him, although he's not the head. And so it's fascinating that you can turn that. And again, the fans are on board. Everybody understands. Asuka was unbeatable. Now she's not. But at some point in time, I'm sure they will bring her back on a streak and she'll be champion once again, or at least this is my hope. But you have all that kind of stuff where proper storytelling and fans buy-in allows that insane flexibility to change people's opinions or change people's views without making them realize that it's actually happening and them just enjoying it and moving along. So again, I applaud that. One of the things though that I found interesting, and it'll all kind of loop in with this, it was, I was listening to Armchair Quarterback with Dax Shepard, and he had Chris Hardwick on of Nerdist fame. And one of the things they talked about was kind of keyboard warriors and how they take real offense to TV shows in which the characters don't do what they want them to do, or they don't lead the character in a certain way, or they don't follow a plot that the viewer thinks they should do. And so that was one of the things that them as actors, producers, directors, writers, or whatever, they understand that you don't know why. You're assuming you know why, and you take personal offense because they're not doing what you want to do. However, there's a larger vision. There's a larger arc. There is future planning that indicates that I need to do this in order to get ourselves here. And so with that storytelling, it again is, you're telling a story for a specific reason. And I've caught myself as well, where I'm like, oh, this is ridiculous. Why are we not including this guy? Why are we doing this way? Why are we doing that way? Again, prime example, Roman Reigns. Why was he not put as a bad guy right at the opportune time when he beat Undertaker? That would have been a perfect opportunity to have him turn heel, and it would make all the sense in the world. I mean, but that's me. And I don't know what their opportunity was or what they were looking to do. And so, unfortunately, that is what it is. But it does offer a bit of perspective in that there is a whole other business in the back, in that you don't know why. We don't know why. We don't know what their plans are. We can only hope that they do what we want. But in the end, we shouldn't take it so personally that we get so angry, and just let things happen. There's reasons for everything. Let's enjoy the stories. But it kind of also ties into the other thing I wanted to mention, which is another set of WWE releases. We had a bunch already this year. It's this giant mystery as to why, what's going on. You know, there's some larger names in here, or rather more notable names. I still think something's going on, as I've read before, and people have hinted that there is potential for a sale. And when you're doing that, people want to see operating costs as low as possible with still getting the same product, so that they creates the revenue and their worth. So we had names like Killian Dane, who I think, while he was part of Sanity, was perfectly billed. And then when that broke up, I think it was a harder struggle for him. Kurt Stallion, who I've only started getting familiar with as I'm watching through NXT, and he's involved in the cruiserweight. I could take it or leave it. Austin Gray, who I've always loved as Anthony Green, because there is a, you know, you're welcome for the full house, you know, retro Anthony Green. So I've always loved that. So, you know, that's always enjoyable. Marina Shafir, I think the writing was on the wall when you look at Jessamyn Duke already being let go. They didn't stand a chance when you compare them with Shayna Baszler and Ronda Rousey. So that's no surprising there. Bollywood Boys, again, you look at their wonderful support of Jinder Mahal when he was, you know, on his title reign. characters like that are hard when you're kind of the stoogy ones to kind of allow them their own opportunity to not be stoogy, especially when there's other tag teams that are kind of already in the upper echelon, especially in the NXT space. So that one doesn't come as a surprise. I will tell you that Fandango and Tyler Breeze was a bit of a shock to me, but then again, I'm still catching up. But still, when I think of NXT, Tyler Breeze is definitely one that stood out to me when I first started watching. When he had the selfie stick and they utilized him and his video through the telephone showing up on the screen. So, you know, it's a different character. And when he came up to the main roster, it didn't quite click. But when he came back down, it seemed like a perfect fit. When you pair them with Rizongo and the Fashion Police, which was the one big thing that worked out well in the WWE main roster, that they, you know, carried it through. So I thought it was a really good tag team. My only assumption can be that they just kind of ran their course, and you know, they've been around, as you know, as I'm reading here, Fandango's been almost 15 years with the company. There's an opportunity here to do something else, or is it just simply he doesn't fit with the direction anymore? Again, we don't know what's going on. So we can only assume, or we can only guess, and we can only be, you know, hoping that there is a reason for it that makes sense, that justifies it to us. But it's all part and parcel of the storytelling, their plans of what they want, how they're going to move their characters along, move their stars. Who do they want to sell? Because, yes, you can have fan favorites and you can push fan favorites, but at the end of the day, promotions can't run without money. And there are certain wrestlers who draw more money, and those are the ones that you have to focus on. When you get big enough, then you can kind of add in more fan favorites to complement your big names. WWE, I think, is a bit different because they are publicly traded, so they have a different focus. They have a different point of view. When you look at their reach, they're going beyond wrestling into movies and into any other cross promotions. You have these reality shows, The Miz and Mrs., and all these other things, so they have a different perspective. So we may never know why Braun Strowman got released. We may never know, did it make sense for Ever-Rise, or were they just simply casualties of an inflated roster? Until we're in the business, we can only assume. Yes, sometimes they upset me, but I can understand, or I can appreciate, that I don't know what's going on. So I'm only guessing, and hopefully, and that's really where I stand, is I hope at some point in time we'll see them back, whether it's from WWE to AEW, AEW to WWE, or whatever, that whenever they make a comeback, whenever they get known again, that whatever they do is big, or it's enjoyable, or whatever the case may be. So one final note, I just finished watching Dark Side of the Ring with Dynamite Kid, and I just want to quickly note, my understanding of him is that he was a terrible human being. That was, you know, just before his passing, that was what I'd read, that's what I understood. This one was really fascinating because some people were able to split out Dynamite Kid as the wrestler versus Dynamite Kid as the human being. So they could appreciate Dynamite Kid in what he did with the ring, how he moved that kind of high flyer style of wrestling, where it hadn't been seen before, you know, kind of bringing it into the main focus. And so he did some great things. The story doesn't shy away from all of the bad things. The steroids, the drinking, the wife abusing, all that other stuff. And even the Rougeau situation, which didn't paint Jacques Rougeau in the greatest light. And then actually, a lot of times when I see him in the show, he's being interviewed, he definitely doesn't come across as, you know, the nicest guy. So, but even, you know, talking with his ex-wife, and even her perspective was interesting because she could see past all of the shitty behavior to see the real him. And I feel like she was really on board with the CTE, and that could be very feasible, especially because he did a lot of head-based moves, you know, flying headbutts and whatnot. So it's just, it was a really good episode. It definitely offered different perspectives. And it also got me thinking, if this situation happened now, Dynamite Kid would disappear. In a state of cancel culture, I don't think anybody could look past his indiscretions outside the ring and allow him to continue doing this in the ring. So it just offers a different perspective. It's a different time, obviously, and there is tons of conversation about cancel culture and can you split out the person for their art versus the person who they are outside of the art and such. So there is still something to be learned from Dynamite Kid. There's still stuff to enjoy from his wrestling side. The other side, less so much. But I have said before, I do recommend watching Dark Side of the Ring. There is a lot of fascinating stories in there. They have a lot of important people to those stories they're interviewing, and they open the door and open your light to much more of the story than they would have just had in a news article. That's it. Last Shot is done. That's it for me today. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week, again with WWE, AEW, and NXT, and another Last Shot. So I hope everyone enjoyed themselves. Please follow us on Twitter at PWO Show. At this point in time, that is my main focus because I just don't have time to do Instagram and YouTube and all that other stuff. So please keep listening, keep enjoying, and if there's something I'm doing great, please let me know. If there's something you hate, please let me know. I enjoy having these conversations. I enjoy talking about wrestling, and I'm always looking to offer a better experience. This is Kyle here. Thanks so much for joining, and we will talk to you next time.